My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons. Welcome to a new episode of the show. This week, I've got a returning guest. Our new friend, Luis, is here again. It's always great chatting with him, and it's the first time I get to record in the new format with him. So we ran long. We just talked. We talked and talked and talked and had some great dialogue, and it was fun. So hopefully y'all enjoy the extra runtime here, get some bonus listening for to make up for the fact that I didn't have an episode last week, you know, holiday week and all. I wanted to get some things on the books to make sure there's just like guest variety. I do have some banked episodes with some previous guests, but I wanted to make sure it was just somebody we haven't heard from in a little while. And yeah, ended up coordinating and scheduling. We got Luis back on this week. So appreciate y'all sticking with the show. And sorry if I ruined your podcast listening routine last week, but here we are again, back with a good, solid, full, giant, I don't know what other adjectives I can throw in here, but it's a good sized episode. Great conversation. Love chatting with Luis. He's a gamer's gamer. And obviously, you know, as a writer and as somebody, as a journalist, and he's got great thoughts and lots of things to say, and a lot of history with games. So it's always fun to kind of just dig deep and get into the weeds with him. So we have some fun. I don't have anything else really crazy going on. It's the typical usual stuff. Just, you know, plug in the Patreon page. I did mail out the first month of postcards. So all of the Patreon supporters for my paid tier are getting their first review of the month postcard. So it's a review of Shenmue, which is interesting because we speak a little bit about Shenmue in this episode with Luis. So the next postcard will go out at the end of the month, and I'm waiting on I got shipping and tracking notifications for my retro game zine, issues 1 and 2 from the Kickstarter that I did. Those will be coming in here in the next couple of weeks, and get those mailed out to folks and start working and producing the next issue. And yeah, 32-bit library still available on the pixelsandpolygons.net website. It's definitely still time to get it in before Christmas. It is a great Christmas gift for gaming fans, I would biasedly say. And I'm still plugging away at my beat-em-up book, The History of Final Fight. Been playing some Final Fight Streetwise, which is not that great of a game, but it was the last Final Fight game. And it was a PS2 era, M-rated, heavily influenced by the giant juggernaut of Grand Theft Auto in that moment. And it wasn't better for it. But it's still entertaining to play through, especially for the purpose of research and kind of digging in and making sure that, you know, every game gets covered here in the book. So this news project, I will still stick to my commitment of trying to get my part of it all done by the end of the calendar year. And sometime early next year, y'all can find out how to get your own copy, and I'll announce more of that later. Yeah, that's it. Like I said, same old, still had to say it. It is my podcast. I do got to plug my stuff. Appreciate y'all for listening. I will not waste any more of your time. Jump into the episode, have some fun, and enjoy listening to the chat I had with Luis this week. See y'all next week. Bye. Welcome to another episode, Luis. This is actually, we've talked a few times now. We record in little sessions and all that stuff, but, you know, this is our third or fourth time, I think, sitting down chatting together. So welcome back to another episode. How's life? How's things going?
Yeah, thanks for asking, Darren. I think this is our fourth episode, I think. Checking my notes here. I could be wrong. Everything's going well. I'm coming to you live from Axon Plug in Philadelphia. I'll be covering it for Unwinnable Magazine. A lot of stuff coming out for me at this time. Just finished and published NPR's top best games of 2024. So do check that out. Got a lot of interesting picks there. In my opinion, that's that and the pace list. Those are the best that you can get from like a mainstream, like big publication. Like some really interesting games are highlighted there that otherwise you really wouldn't see or wouldn't get any attention otherwise, unless you're into like really like small like blogs or you're reading Critical Distance, which everybody should be. The best games writing on the internet, Critical Distance, check that out.
Cool. There's some good plugs there to look forward to. Well, since you're traveling, do you bring games on the road, or did you bring anything on this trip with you right now that you're playing?
Good question. Sometimes I do. This trip is fairly short, and I'm gonna be doing a lot of work. So, in this one, no, I mean I brought my computer, so technically, yeah, and I have my smartphone, and those have games. If I play anything during this trip, it's gonna be this new game, Song of Silence, which came out. It was it's a RTS that's it's kind of difficult to, it's not that difficult to describe. It's like, it has gorgeous art, I would say that. And that's what really drew me into the game. And then I've been playing it and kind of enjoyed it, actually. By the time we record this, I don't know when this is going to air, but I think my best of games list for Pop Matters is going to be there and it's going to be published. And I talk about that game. I added it there. It's a game that I don't think got enough attention. That being said, though, I think this year has just been just like phenomenal. I think for true sickos like me, I think this might be probably the greatest year ever when it comes to publishing games. And I don't mean that from the front of like big AAA developers. I think it's been kind of lacking. But if you play a lot of the smaller, like, or keep up with the indie scene, it's just been truly remarkable. Like every month has like two or three games that are just either innovative or do things that either I haven't seen before, or they do something that has been done, but just like, that's, you know, better than any other game has done. I mean, I'm thinking stuff like UFO 50, 1,000 Times Resist, just so many games. Animal Well, just really remarkable year.
Animal Well was rad. That one definitely caught me by surprise, like thinking it was going to be one thing, and then there's like more layers to like this onion, and with its like minimal narrative, but like legitimately there still is like a story thread to be found, especially after you finish it and you start seeing that there's like this cool loop to it. Like, yeah, that was a really rad one this year.
I definitely enjoy that game. Yeah.
I want UFO 50 real bad. I don't play on my computer at all. I have a Mac and everything, but I'm sure I can find a way to play it that way.
Oh, but yeah, that's not a Mac. But
I'm just waiting for an inevitable console.
Rumor has it that it's coming out. Yeah, rumor has it that it's coming out. And I think it's going to, it's been getting, if you've been keeping up with a lot of the best of lists coming up, it's very high on a lot of people's lists on there. And definitely, that's a game that definitely needs to be played more. We've never really seen anything like that before. It's like 50 games, all original.
Yeah, like a game within a game, meta contextually, as if it was this like lost publisher, and like how they're all part of this like fake history and interconnected but different. And yeah, it just seems like such a cool concept and an idea. And being able to have like all those genres covered by, you know, there's a handful of like really great indie devs like who are responsible for a lot of those games too, which is just kind of rad to see them all work together in like this gaming anthology almost, but with a really smart and kind of unique like background or backbone to kind of connect it all through. Super different. I hope it gets a lot of praise and awards, and that helps funnel some more money in their pockets to help that console release that will allow more people to play it, hopefully. At least one more. Not me. I'll play it right here.
Yeah, no, I've been hearing a lot of like rumors that it's going to come out in other platforms. And yeah, that's an incredible game. Some of those games on there are already, just by themselves, if they would have come out alone, they would have been high on my list of favorite games this year. So just, and then having, not all 50 of those games are, you know, are as great as others, but most of them are truly like fantastic. And then some are just incredible. Just a hell of a fucking time.
That's cool. Cool. Well, we'll put the show links or the in the show notes. I'll put like some links to some of your recent articles there. Then, yeah, I plan to edit this tonight, and this will be tomorrow, which is what, Friday, December 6th. So this is the Friday, December 6th episode.
Godspeed. So, Godspeed. Yeah.
I can crank them out. So that's cool. Let's get into the icebreaker then that I've got for you before we get into the main course then. But this one I've asked before, and I'll kind of frame it in a slightly different way. But what important game character? So it doesn't have to be the main character, but just maybe somebody important to the plot or reoccurring enough. Have you ever disliked the most, or has rubbed you the wrong way, and you just don't, you know, jive with what they're bringing to the table? Is there a game character who, you know, might be important or core to the game that you've just been annoyed by or disliked in a game?
Now, when we mean important, I guess, how important are we talking about? Is it somebody like at one point you have to talk to, or it's just...
Yeah, like somebody who isn't going to be optional. So it could be a party member in RPG, or it could just be like, you know, somebody important to the story that you have to visit, you know, a couple of times or something, you know. It could be... you know, one of the selectable characters in a fighting game, or it could be, you know, somebody who's, it doesn't necessarily have to be the main character. I mean, we can stretch it, but yeah. Is there just a gaming character who's, you know, semi key or semi relevant in the overall, you know, release of the game that has rubbed you the wrong way, has annoyed you, or you just outright dislike?
There's a lot of those. I'll give like one really short one, and then I'll give like my real answer. Okay. So Dan from Street Fighter, just because I wasn't in on the joke initially, right? Mm-hmm. In Alpha, so I'm playing him like, oh yeah, Dan, and it's like, wait, this guy sucks.
Yeah,
you know, it's like as a kid, I didn't really like understand like the concept of like, why would you put a character that sucks in a competitive fighting game?
Yeah,
you know, and it was just
fireballs, and yeah, he just did not. He looked like he would play like a Ryu or Ken, but then he's just coming up short, like in all avenues.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's like, and that's like a dumb, basic like kid. You're just like, oh, you know, like Ken and like Ryu, those are like the cool people. Right? So it's like, oh, another one of those. Awesome. And then it's like, nope, he is not that. But through time, you know, once I figured out and got with the program, it's like, oh yeah, this guy's just like a, you know, this guy's just like a funny like spoof on it, you know. And then similar to, and it's actually, I've been replaying Shenmue recently. I'm gonna be on Tales of the Backlog podcast. We're gonna be talking about that, and but I don't know if I'm supposed to say. But anyway, whatever.
I just discovered that podcast and started chatting with that the guy on Blue Sky, and I've been listening to that. I do enjoy that podcast. That's a rad one too. If you're listening to this really one and you're looking for more gaming podcasts, like there's another great one to check out for sure. And potentially, if it was the beans are being spilled too early, whoops, but maybe a Shenmue episode in the future with Luis. That sounds cool.
Yeah, and I have to say that when I first played the game, now this is what my third time actually like doing a full playthrough of Shenmue 1 specifically. Tom is I mean, he is almost, at this point, he's like a spirit animal. You know, he's not even like a, he's like an apparition. Like, initially when I played that game, and I'm going to say this, you know, as somebody who, you know, I'm from the Caribbean. I'm like a person of color. So I saw him, and it's like, as a kid, I'm like, yeah, whatever, you know, it's cool. And but then he's talking in English, and you're like, wait, what? And then you find out he's like American. And then it just made me like, not like I wasn't like furious. It was just like, it just rubbed me the wrong way. Yeah. Now, similar to Dan, now at this point, I don't think it was a joke though, but at this point, it's just so bewildering. Like all the like decisions for that it is kind of like almost like high comedy. Yeah. In like a sick way, because it's like he's American. That's like his story, right?
Yeah, he goes back to America. He just loves
Japan so much. The end, but he's in Japan because he likes it. But he looks like, if he's like, besides being like, you know, brown and having like dreadlocks, he looks like he's Japanese. But he speaks with a fake ass Jamaican accent, and then sometimes like that voice actor can't hold it, and it sounds like a Chinese person like speaking like U.S. English sometimes. So it's just like, wait, what is going on? And replaying that now, like every time I replay that game, it just gets funnier. Like it's just like, oh my god, this guy's like hilarious. This guy's like probably the greatest video game character of all time, you know. But it's not. It's something that took time. You know, it just grows on you. I think that's a thing with Shenmue as a game, though. It just really grows on you. Yeah. I'll talk more about Tom at the Tales of the Backlog. So if anybody's interested in hearing more musings and on Tom.
I thought, I'm not a big fan of Fuxon, his, you know, roommate. I mean, I don't know what is his relation is to Ryo. I mean, he lives there at their little compounds and everything, and he trains as well. But yeah, I never knew what his direct relation was with Ryo or anything, but he always just kind of loiters about and complains and is like very concerned for Ryo, but he doesn't ever actually do anything himself. And he always just, you know, he jokingly, like, I always feel like he's just like in my mind, like getting in the way, never actually do anything to help contribute to, the greater story or the greater good of what his adventure is. He's just kind of hanging out at his house.
Hey, he gave him his life savings, man.
That's
in that
true.
Piggy bank. Don't forget that. That's crazy. True. Yeah. He is like a useless character who means good, you know, who means to be good. I think he's, from my understanding, he's just like he is like a student of the, of Hisuki, the Hisuki martial arts. He's learning under Ryu's father.
But once the father is killed, like, I mean, he should start, you know, packing his stuff and maybe figuring out what's next for him. I don't know that he belongs to continue to live there for too long, you know, if ultimately his master is deceased and that's the person who was going to train him. I mean, what is he really doing in the family, you know, compound there? I don't know. Oh.
Well, spoilers over, right? At the end of the game of Shenmue 1, Ryu tells Fuku-san to take care of the dojo while he's gone.
True.
So,
that
I mean, like, he... And I don't know. I kind of get... I mean, there's not much said on his backstory, but I'm assuming that he's been, like, adopted into the family.
Yeah, that's what it feels
form,
like.
So.
Yeah. Like, he's been around long enough, and he was part of that. I'm sure it doesn't seem like there was, like, a large school there, so he was, you know, probably one of the few who were, like, training under him, and, like, definitely just seems to be, you know, adopted into, like, you know, he's definitely is contributing and participating around, like, the home and everything that's happening there. So it makes sense.
He probably cleans and everything.
Yeah. My friend and I, we love Shenmue. We always joke, though, when he leaves, you know, and he goes on the boat and everything over for Shenmue 2. Like when he leaves Fuxan, he tells him, you know, don't touch my Sega Saturn, even though he shouldn't have a Sega Saturn or whatever. But we always joke that, like, you know, like, hey, don't touch my stuff when I'm gone. And we always just make this idea that Fuxan wants to, like, open up the cupboard and, like, pull out that Saturn and maybe play some games. But he knows Ryo would be mad at him. And so he's just trying to, like, keep to himself. It's just headcanon.
I mean, well, he does have that Virtua Fighter poster in his room.
Yeah he probably wants that,
you so know, he's a game, he's a sicko, he needs that Virtual Fighter,
that 1986 Sega Saturn prototype. I mean, it's definitely, like, way too early to be actually released, but, you know, somehow it's there.
I think that's, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's like the perfect, thing of, like, what Shenmue, like, is. It's like that Sega Saturn that exists in, like, 1986. It's just like, wait, what?
Yeah.
That didn't come out at that. It's like the game just feels like that. It's like, at times, it's like too old for what it's trying to do, but also, like, too forward looking at the same time. Yeah,
and realistically, you know, you'd have the capsule toys of various Sega properties that weren't actually released yet. I mean, it goes beyond the Saturn at this point. I'm just realizing that now. Huh.
No, it's an awesome game. And as replaying it again, I just have, like, an appreciation of that game. I mean, it's not perfect in the sense of, like, how it plays, especially compared to modern standards. But if you appreciate it for what it's trying to do, and it's the weirdest, like, AAA, like, ultra expensive game ever, because it actually, like, not very much happens in this very, like, narrative driven game, right? Like, even games at that time, like something like Final Fantasy VII, which came out a few years before, right? It's like super expensive for the time and everything. I mean, Final Fantasy X would come out just like soon after that, and that's like massive epic game. Shenmue's just like, you're just talking to people, trying to find out what happens, and you're trying to get on this boat to, like, avenge, like, your father. It just seems like, obviously, the stakes seem very high, but, like, when you look at it from the perspective of the story, but it's not,
narratively is where all the core of it is. Yeah, because gameplay wise, it's, you know, it's like you have to just interact or find or talk to the one right person, and if they're not available to you, you just got to come back during the right time or place. And then just kind of slowly just breadcrumbs you through it with that. But it's an amazing game. Like, I mean, it's I did a review on it recently for this little postcard of the month thing I've been starting up. And Shenmue 1 was my first postcard I did. But I started my review with, Shenmue is a work of art. It is also a flawed video game. So it's those two things at once. But yeah, I'm looking forward to this episode then. I can keep talking Shenmue as well. And, you know, it may be relevant to what our main topic is as well. So how about we just jump into that? I think this is a good transition, because we can probably continue some more of this conversation there. But the main topic, the main question I wanted to ask you and have a conversation around, what is more important to you, narrative or gameplay? Are there some games you've enjoyed with a poor narrative but great gameplay, or vice versa? I think Shenmue can kind of stick into this question quite well, actually. But I'd love to know what you originally were thinking about, maybe to help answer the question with, and we'll just go from there.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought this up. Yeah, because I've been playing a lot of... Because Shenmue, at its core, it's a classic, like, adventure game, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm more of a gameplay person. Like, I kind of fall within, like, the Miyamoto camp, right? When he says, you know, that, you know, stories in games are just, like, you know, whatever. Like, it's about, like, the gameplay. Like, I can do a game with very little to no story as long as, you know, the gameplay is, like, very good. Now, that being said, though, if the narrative... I'd say, like, the gameplay is amazing, but the story, there is a story, and it's, like, a big part of the game, and it really sucks. It does hurt a lot. Like, even for me, there's, like, a few examples where I'm just like, oh, I can't really or not even like the story sucks. It's like I just can't gel with the story. Like it's either like too convoluted for like its own good at times, or it's just like for this is gonna be probably sacrilege for a lot of people, but like I'm not a huge like Yoko Taro like near person based on that. Just because I mean I understand those stories like on their own, but I this is my problem having like critic like game study brain person on here. It's like I'm always looking at games also from perspectives of not only gamers but then let's say other people that just are coming to this probably for like the first time. Like what happened if like someone's like 80-year-old grandma picked up Nier for the first time, that type of situation. Mm-hmm. It's like and that's a I'm not saying that obviously that you know a developer like narrative designer has to write for that. That would be ludicrous. It'll be hilarious, but it'll be ludicrous, you know, to expect that. But I and that's one of those games where I don't like I also don't like pretentious storytelling as well. There's a way of doing like very like big like epic like narratives. I think a few games this year actually come to mind. I think A Thousand Times Resist by Sunset Visitor, that game has like an epic narrative, and that's actually fairly light on gameplay. But I think the narrative is just so amazing that it's just I was so captivated. And this year's had a few of the of those type of games because I know. You know, the so-called, like, walking simulators and stuff. I haven't been a huge fan of those games just because, as I said before, I'm pretty much a gameplay person. And those I felt fairly light on. Even, like, the ones that have, like, really good, like stories, you know, like Gone Home, What Remains of Edith Finch, even, like, something like The Stanley Parable. But... You know, they just don't, they're just not my type of game, right? It's not anything against them. Like, I respect them for what, you know, what they're doing. But this year, I really come around to that. And just overall, just like adventure games as a whole. I also, a shout out to the Phoenix Springs, which is an adventure game that came out this year by Palagram Studio. That's in it, that the narrative there, like just the way that the story is told. It's like, it's very, a lot of the story's done like environmentally and through mood, like, you know, like very little. So as you're playing, it's like you're going from place to place, like just like enough is given to you where it's substantial. It makes sense, but there's still a lot of holes that you want to fill in, and then it gives you that, it keeps you coming for more. And on that note, I think we can switch gears to something like Shenmue, which is a game where I actually think that the gameplay is lacking and the narrative is fine. I think mm-hmm. It's fine. It's not great, especially if you're playing that in with the English voice acting. I think it can be, if you're expecting one thing, I think you'll be disappointed. I think now it's become like endearing because it's the camp element to it. It's just so, some of the acting is just so hilariously bad. I always think of those two schoolgirls that are just like standing like on that corner and you talk to them and they're just like screaming at you. They're like, what the hell, you know, what the hell do you want? I forget the exact like stuff that they're saying, but it's just so funny.
There's just characters that go from like 1 to 100 and like, what are you looking at, man? And I'm like, whoa, I'm just looking for some sailors. Like, get out of my face, man. Like the,
yeah, it's so,
I love that. It's so funny. I think being in that era though, I think if you like knowing where they came from, like knowing the, I don't want to say limitations, but I mean like, it there wasn't a lot of voice acting in games leading up to that and all that stuff. And especially when, you know, Sega's making, you know, House of the Dead and other things that were sprinkling in voice acting. They found a little campy niche that I don't think they intended for it to be that way, but in conjunction with, you know, knowing where their heart is and what the intention was in addition to then, you know, being able to read between the lines and then having time just go on and like appreciate a little bit differently. Like it's gone through like ebbs and flows of like, you know, how it's been received and everything. And yeah, it isn't great. It isn't even good, but it still is a part of this like mixture that creates just like a really wonderful game that like, there's not any specific outstanding element to it that like raises it to that level, but for some reason combining enough of those varying like flavors like just made it special enough and unique enough, even, you know, with time to stand out. Yeah, it's just a funny special game.
Yeah, I think it's very special. I hate the phrase, it's, you know, it's like, it's how do people like state it, it's like it's better than any right it has to, or like whatever, something like that. But not that Shenmue series like that, but Shenmue's definitely greater than the sum of its parts. The way that like Suzuki and like Sega went about this game, like I think just really makes it special, because these are people that are like masters of arcade games, just like pure games, right? Talking about like Outrun, talking about Space Harrier, just, you know, you just no narrative at all, really. You're just like, hey, like, this is what you're doing, you know, immaculate gameplay. And for the time, we're talking about a lot, I mean, most of these games are arcade games, right? Just, you know, fantastic, like, technical achievements, like for the time. So they leaned on pushing the technical achievements for Shenmue, but really like doing something really different, like getting out of like the comfort zone when it comes to like gameplay. It's almost like trying to make this like artistic statement beyond like games with it. So a lot of that is what ended up suffering was a lot of like the gameplay. I'm not saying that there's not moments of Shenmue that are fun. For some reason, those like forklift driving and the racing stuff is like extremely fun. And when you really think about it, it's like the most like bare bones, you know, like type of like racing or just, you know, or tasks that you can be doing like in a video game. But they just handle pretty well, in my opinion, especially considering like the time. And that's saying a lot, because those initial controls, those tank controls for Ryu can be rough for a lot of people. And the combat too is a little awkward. I mean, I know a lot of that comes from like the Virtua Fighter like engine and takes, but because of like the space and everything, it can be, you know, I've seen some people do some pretty cool stuff in it, but I think it's just it's not streamlined enough for the type of game that it is. Because you go from situations that it's just such an odd game. Like, it's just so bizarre. Like, a lot of the decisions are so bizarre, because it is such a simple, like, at its core, it's very simplistic. I mean, you're talking about a game that's like in the lineage of a lot of the more, like, a lot of the most, like, popular and user-friendly games, like stuff like, you know, like Portopia by Yuji Horii, you know, you're talking about Famicom Detective Club, just like these very streamlined adventure games, right, where you're trying to like find information, you're investigating something, which is essentially what that game is, but you make it in 3D and you can interact with, at the time, what seemed like almost everything, right? It's so ambitious. I think.
There is a lack of gameplay, quote unquote, but the gameplay, like the mechanics of it, allow for so much gameplay. It's just what they were able to do within the linear narrative of it. Because yeah, the engine allows Ryo to like open up just like cupboard doors, like interact with like every like thing on like a phone bank, a map on the wall, a poster, any individual walking around the neighborhood, anything in the convenience stores, anything, like you can do so much, but it's there isn't really a purpose to do that necessarily outside of like your simple task of driving the narrative and kind of uncovering the detective side of things. So it's just, it's interesting how it's, it has so much gameplay, but it, realistically it doesn't. And
But you can go also to the U arcade and play arcade games. You know, it's just, and those play really well. I mean, it's almost, it's like the progenitor to like to Yakuza, to like a Dragon, which are at this point some of the greatest games like ever made. And also not just, and are very similar like in structure as well. It lives on. It definitely lives on. And I think Shenmue 2 does a lot of stuff better than the first Shenmue. And unfortunately, Shenmue 3 had a lot of issues, but it's just, those are games that like you just can't help rooting for. And I'm somebody that's fairly critical of like really like expensive video games for a lot of reasons, just like the cost, and I'm not going to get too much into it, but it's like, that's a game though that I look at all the time and I just can't help but like smile and be like, wow, they really tried, right? It's like they really tried. They went for broke on it, like with that game. And it's like, to make a $70 million game at the time, which is the most expensive game, video game ever made, and to have like a story that's like so earnest, like not cynical, right? It's, I mean, by any standard, it's almost like a nonviolent game, you know? It's really like remarkable. And I think, I don't think that game gets praised enough. I actually don't. It's not a perfect game, but it can't be, something that takes that much ambition can't be perfect. It just can't. It's just, it, Shenmue failed where it failed, so other games, you know, can succeed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I love the entire experience. When it was re-released prior to that Shenmue 3 release, I went through and I got the platinum trophies on for Shenmue 1 and 2 both. And I did play the hell out of 3. I finished 3, and I would have a platinum trophy on that too, on the PlayStation release, if it wasn't for some ridiculous catch 100 fish trophy, which would require like doing the math on it, even like finding the fastest route to catch one. Like doing the math, I was like, okay, there's like 68 hours of gameplay of me just fishing right now if I wanted to really get this trophy. Like, it's just, that's not going to happen. Not worth it. It is worth it because I did like probably do half of it, but then I realized like it's at this point I gotta throw in the towel and call it a day here. But yeah, it's wonderful. I as you were talking about it, I think my default preferred experience with a game is, I think I would prefer the narrative to be strong in a game, and I could put up with weaker or lackluster gameplay. If I had to like tilt the scales one way or the other, I think that like if I had to, I think I would go that route. But I play so many types of games, and I'm such a fan of just games from over the years, like that have, you know, that prove a counterpoint to that already. You know, I mean, I just finished that Dragon Quest III HD 2D remake. I mean, and that's
amazing.
You know, very amazing. Very light in narrative, you know, because it's one of the earlier releases, but it does have a great narrative to it. You know, it's core gameplay and like the design of that classic, you know, RPG formula and everything that like kept me hooked to it and everything. And yeah, I mean, I there's just so many types of games that, you know, are all like Parappa the Rapper, you know, like what do you call that? Like I'm playing a very light, you know, rhythm button timed mini game over the backbone of a coming of age story in a wildly awesome visual package. You know, like it's very little gameplay and essentially all narrative, and even, you know, elementary, you know, narrative, but, it was still great. Like it's a game that I just like, I love to death, as well. So, yeah, I don't. I this question, I was just curious to see, like, you know, what other folks' thoughts are. You know, like, I don't think there is a right or wrong to it. I just think, like, the idea of, like, you know, what is more important to you as an individual. Like, I don't think it means saying gameplay doesn't mean you're saying narrative is not important. But, you know, where on your scales do you tip it to, you know, typically in your favorite type of games and everything. So yeah, cool conversation and more Shenmue talk. So you can never go wrong with that. Hopefully we didn't burn you out there. I'm looking forward to that Tales from the Backlog episode then. But
no, Luis, this is getting my brain juices flowing on this. So this is that I can really go crazy in when that podcast airs. I think people aren't gonna be prepared for the pronouncements that are gonna be made on that show. It's gonna be they're gonna have to call Interpol on me.
That's great. All right, well, I think that will do it for this episode. I appreciate the conversation. This one was fun. It's still kind of early on me doing the single guest episode, so I'm always curious to know what the runtime is going to look like. But this is, you know, well over 30 minutes for just a single guest when the previous episodes were about 30 minutes with two. So we did some talking, and I appreciate you and appreciate your time. Anything you want to share before we wrap up then? And before we go, like I said, this will be the December 6th episode. So it'll be out tomorrow at the time of recording.
Yeah. I mean, that's always great to be on there. And it's an exciting time of the year. You know, a lot of publications have their best of games. You know, it's, a lot of people look back. I personally feel that these lists should be coming out in January, but you know, it's just because that it's fairer to, you know, to games that come out like later in the year, like people like miss stuff. And oftentimes a lot of really great games come out, you know, in those like 3 weeks, like around Christmas time. But you can check my work out at Pop Matters, and on Winnable, Gamers with Glasses, and NPR. The time of this recording, NPR, we published our best games of 2024, and also my Pop Matters list of best games of 2024 is also going to be out at the time of this recording. Should be out in the morning. That's the main stuff. I have like other stuff working on, but I can't. I just have too much stuff right now. Oh, yeah. And I have I'm not going to say that because I'm already, you know, the Video Game History Foundation is doing their fundraiser. So if anybody wants to donate, just don't go on my Boost Sky account and don't do as I said, but it yourself though.
I saw that and I gave it a friendly like and repost, but yeah, my wallets aren't that deep. Godspeed to whatever line you end up drawing there or whatever you end up doing. It was a great gesture.
I'll keep my word, but that just means that Frank Cifaldi is going to have a meeting with me, a once a month meeting with me, that's an option there. If you donate like $100, like a month, concurrently, he has to like sit with you. So, you know, I'm going to waste his time. I'm not going to waste his time. Frank is great. And the Video Game History Foundation is just an essential organization when it comes to like video game preservation and just like the history of games and its future too, like in general. So yeah, please donate.
Right on. I'll have information in the show notes below with your links and things like that as well. So appreciate you again. Luis, we'll have another conversation in the future for sure. But thanks everybody for listening. Have a great rest of your day. Bye.